The Deep Field.
Neće li ničo rači? Šta glaviš vodje?
Hello, and welcome to The Deep Field.
Kato si mi našao? Da, ricaš.
I'm your host, Cole Chakey.
Pokapsili su me u Buenosu Airesu, na znovom Kato. Jasne. Begrim te, rači mi jasne. Ne, u takom gradu? Kato su me nošli. Bio sam abrešan i nad sam u Torontu. Isuse, ne nago dumiti, u rašiju moter, kad su mi doli.
And it's episode 3, Inventing Lavinian, taped live in Calgary at Alberta Theatre Projects. This is a first for us, a live recording, and for this one we partnered with Alberta Theatre Projects because on their beautiful stage right now they have a world premiere on their hands of a play called Butcher by Nicolas Bihan. Now Nicolas is one of Canada's finest writers and a bilingual writer to boot, and for Butcher he took his multilingual writing tradition a step further and collaborated with two professors from the University of Toronto to invent a language for the play. Yeah, they invented a language that is, I'm guessing, at least for a little while, the world's newest language. It's called Lavinian, of the fictional Slavic country Lavinia. Now, this episode isn't really about the play. What it is my conversation with Nicolas and the two inventors of Lavinian, Christina Kramer and Dragana Obradovic. And really, it's a chat where I'm trying to understand how one would actually go about inventing a new language, which I've got to say is so high up on my list of possible human intellectual achievements. To me, it's got to be the language equivalent of sending a human into orbit or linguistic open brain surgery or some other amazing human feat that I could never really imagine approaching. So if you're in the Calgary area, I'd say get out and try and see Butcher. You can go to atplive.com for info. The play runs till November 1st. But hey, if that's not in the cards, if you're in another city, well, hello. Or if you're catching up with us after the 1st, don't worry. I think the conversation stands on its own and is fascinating in its own right. For those of you who haven't seen the play, let me give you some real quick context. I'm going to try to do this without spoilers, which, while I guess actually giving a spoiler alert is a bit of a spoiler in itself, but anyways, all you really need to know for this conversation is that while the play is set in a 2014 Toronto police station, it has its characters grapple with the brutal history of this fictional country, Lavinia. One character, Joseph, speaks only this invented language, and other characters speak it as well. It's mysterious and dark and thrilling, and I guess that's all that needs saying right now. So thank you to these three for sitting down with me, and let's get to my chat with Christina, Dragana, and Nicolas.
Thank you, and good evening, and I'm going to get right into introducing our guests. First, we have the inventors of the new language, Lavinian, maybe the newest language on the planet right now? Odds are good. So let's say the inventors of the world's newest language, Lavinian. First, please welcome to the stage Christina Kramer. And please welcome to the stage Dragana Obradovic. Welcome, and thank you so much for taking some time out of a very busy weekend to chat with me. And congratulations on the premiere of Butcher and on the first public utterances of Lavinian.
Thank you. Vola.
Vola, good. So this is our first bit of Lavinian. I'm wondering if we can start off the night with hearing some of this new language. So Dragana, if you would please.
Absolutely. I'd like to read from the play rather than act. I'm rusty. We haven't done this for a while, but I'll quote from Yosef's speech from the confession at the end. Bila je omašna, zastaneš. Ostalim zoraljblicima dala je doru I nema čuge kao dore. So you get a flavor of the language and tripping up on some of the pronunciation there.
So I'm so curious, when the idea was first brought to you to invent this new language, what's the entry point to creating a language?
Well, where you begin depends upon where you're going and where you want to end up. And so if you're inventing a language for a completely new world, so Klingon, the people who are inventing Klingon have one starting point. People who are trying to create an international auxiliary language like Esperanto have a different starting point. We had a very specific starting point, and that is we were moving into a world that was preset for us by Nicholas. And so our starting point was probably not the normal starting point, perhaps, of somebody who's starting a language.
And just to add to that, one of the things we realized last night when we were talking about Lavinian to the actors, Lavinian is a very particular world. It belongs to the world of the play, of crudeness, terror, genocide. It's a very specific language. It doesn't have upper registers. It has this very particular identity that other languages that are invented in the science fiction world have, but in their own parallel way.
How much of the play was presented to you when you began the work of creating Lavinian?
Well, in the very beginning, it was an idea. It was sort of these theoretical things that you agree to when you have really no idea what you're agreeing to. So, hypothetically, would you like to make up a language? Yeah, sure. But then 7 years go by, and I'm not actually, this is not on the front burner at all, and then 7 years go by, and then the email drops into the inbox. Remember you agreed that you would make up a language? And at that point, then, it becomes a reality of having to come to terms with the world of the play. And so all I had in the beginning, and I'm saying I because, as you'll learn through this podcast, that it began with me, and then I came to a very quick dead end. And I could no longer do it on my own. It had to be a collaboration, and it actually had to be a collaboration with my colleague, Dragan Obradovic. So we'll explain how we got to that point. So what I get from Nicholas is disembodied sentences. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I need the following words and phrases in Lavinian.
So let's hear about this, your beginning stages, that and what led you driving into this brick wall.
So Nicholas walks by my office at University of Toronto and says, so do you think you could make up a language? And I go, yeah, sure, I've got a great idea. And I'll try not to be too technical about this linguistically, but if we look at a map of, I'm going to take Europe because this language is a European language. Linguists talk about dialect continua. So if we could erase standard languages and just imagine the world with no state borders, and we could just imagine people living on the land, speaking what they speak, dialects move from village to village to village, and they shade into one another. So Swiss German will shade into Bavarian German, which will shade into, you know, we've got Plattdeutsch and Dutch and Luxembourgish, and so they're very similar. And if we didn't have to give them names, they'd just be very similar sounding dialects. So the particular dialect continuum that Lavinian belongs to is the South Slavic language continuum. So that stretches from the Austrian border, actually into Austria. There's actually Slavic speakers in southern Austria. So from Austria to the Black Sea. Mm-hmm. So I thought it would be very clever to take the sentence structure from the easternmost dialects in Bulgaria and match that with the sound system of the northernmost dialects of Slovenian.
Obviously.
Well, yes.
Yes. And then what brought you to bring in a collaborator?
So I did that, and what's unusual about this made-up language is that it belongs to a specific world, and it belongs to a world that's to conjure up the wars of the disintegration of Yugoslavia, but it wasn't to be in a specific place. But along that continuum, this war took place in the central zones and not at its peripheries. And so to my ears, it doesn't matter to anybody else, but to me, it was encoding a language that somehow implicated languages, locations, and things that weren't part of this war. And so the only analogy I could come up with is, imagine you wanted to make a movie about the Second World War, and it kind of had to do with German, but you didn't want to use German, so you used Swedish. And so the sound, the acoustics would be all wrong. Mm-hmm. Or we're going to set something in South America, but we're going to use French as our base language. It was not believable to me. And the language had to be believable to me, because it had to be believable to people who might understand some parts of it and to understand the world it was in. So that's what I did when I was at the Banff Center, among other things, and I came back from Banff and I said, this is a disaster. And so my colleague Dragan Obradovic is actually a literary scholar who speaks the languages and dialects of the central zones.
So Dragan, what was your first reaction when this project was brought to you?
Brilliant. I can put off my marking and procrastinate by creating a new language. It was the end of the semester. It was exam hell. It was fun. It's creative. Creative in a way that our professional work is not. I think as scholars, we are very innovative. We push boundaries. But this felt like we were using our skills for something very different. It was really invigorating to see a creative process, to see the theater world in the making, to see behind the scenes. And I love working with Christina at every opportunity. So this was another reason for us. This was something else that I wanted to do, to work with Christina on this project, to combine our different disciplines, our different backgrounds, the different languages that we speak. I think that's something we haven't thought about. We actually bring very different skills to the table.
I think, that's what made it such this wonderful collaborative process. Yeah.
So it's an invented language, but like you were mentioning, it is based on real languages. And the play that it is set in is portraying conflict, quite visceral and gruesome ethnic conflict. So how does that reality affect the creation of an invented language?
Dragana produced a translation of these lines that were needed in a mélange of taking structural and sound elements from across this dialect continuum. So we knew from the beginning we didn't want it to be any specific language. We were going to grab here and there, and we were going to, Dragana produced this translation for me. And at that point, I ran it through the computer. This is going to be really easy. We're going to get Nicholas his language this weekend, because we're just going to do one-for-one substitutions. We're going to turn L's to R's and B's to P's and N's to M's. And Bob's your uncle. You've got a new language. But it turned out to not sound like a Slavic language anymore. Mm-hmm. Because a Slavic language, Slavic languages still have very transparent roots. And so the word for hospital, for example, there's the Slavic root bol, which means pain, and we took the bol, which means pain, and then we attached the suffix that you wouldn't expect with bol to create a new word, bolnica, which is a hospital. And a Slavic language has to have recognizable roots. So that's what we did. And then we began manipulating. So we ended up having to take this base text and then word by word pick them up, rotate them around, and talk about them between ourselves. So each word has its own etymology.
I can give you one such etymology.
Yes, please.
The word for jacket in the play, we settled on plakna. And this is a combination of two different words. The word for jacket in this continuum that includes Bosnian, Croatian, and Serbian, and Montenegrin is jakna. But we decided to add another layer by adding the prefix of the word for cloth, platno. So by combining the two, we got plakna. And in a sense, it's one word, but the presence of both words is important for the meaning that we wanted this word to convey, because Josef, whose jacket is being referred to here, he's wearing the jacket. But the fact that one of the things that we were thinking is we use cloth as a shroud, that he's wearing the jacket, but that cloth is also covering his secret, mm-hmm. his secrets. It's covering the rottenness. And so what we wanted, I suppose, was to have this embedded clothness to signal the symbolic covering of himself. Yeah. So,
if I can give you another example, and we know that nobody is going to hear these and know these things, but language has texture and meaning, and we felt if the words and sentences had this kind of embedded meaning, even if it wasn't transparent, it would give this texture. So I get an email from Nicholas. I need the names of two ethnic groups. but we don't know why these people are in conflict, and we don't know, is it really ethnic conflict, or is it political, or is it religious, or what is it that's made these people in conflict? So I wanted some words that were sort of related, but were sort of disorienting and topsy-turvy. And so my words that I gave Nicholas were Sujni and Desni. Sujni is actually a combination of north and south in these languages, so it's multidirectional at the same time. And then it is put, so my mixed north-south is put in opposition to Desni, which is rightness, not correctness, but directionality. So we have two things that are sort of directional, but we actually have three things, and they're not really correlative in the way that it's confusing why things come into conflict.
And what is the process like to, or, emotionally, because this is a creative effort, emotionally, what does it mean for you to be inventing languages that are words in a language that is describing some really gruesome and horrific storytelling?
Actually, it wasn't that fun. So we thought we would, before a live audience, try and augment
the vocabulary
to include some nice things.
So we'll create some Lavinian for you right now.
Amazing.
We cheated a little bit last night, which is what actually gave us this idea. But in the show, after the show, we spoke to Miss Monteith, who plays Elena. And when we introduced ourselves and we started talking about Lavinian, she wanted to say, thank you, ladies. And she said, vola, ladies. And we realized, oh, what's the Lavinian word for ladies? Christina, what should we do about ladies? So we chose the first, so we decided on a particular word that came together from two nouns. One was dame.
So dame is really elevated style for, you know, ladies.
Like madam.
Like madam. And combined it with the neutral word for women, ženy.
To come up with daže.
So vola daže.
Vola daže. And then so we did that last night after three glasses of wine. So we thought we'll do one. We'll do one now.
We thought Lavinian needs the word love, Nicholas. So
this is a lot of pressure right now.
What's the word for love?
Ljubav.
So you have ljubav. But in Bosnian, you also get the Turkism sevda.
This is true, sevda. Mm-hmm.
What's your verb to love?
Ljubiti, voliti, voljeti.
So you've got voliti. In Macedonian, we get saka. And Bulgarian, you get iska.
So can we, do you want to keep av? Do you want to keep the suffix?
If we keep the of, then it also is acoustically, we get the love from English as well.
This is true. And it's a legitimate ending that will kindle recognition.
How about sav?
Sav. But you want to throw out sevda altogether? You don't want to have that?
I like the da, because it's nice and Bosnian to get that Turkish form in there. But savda is too close.
Ljudah.
Say it again.
Ljudah.
Ljudah.
So it's too close to ljudi. It's too close to ljudi.
How about lavda or levda?
Levda.
Lavda.
Sometimes it just fails, but there we go. Levda.
Levda.
Wow.
Levda.
Did someone write that down? We will forget.
Well, luckily we're recording this.
So that's what it was, word by word.
A daj mi pomaći stekuti čizle. Lobe me nađe. Vola. Vola. Rači njimu da bertam u bomaku. Pomaći mi da odiđem vodate. Kježi mu poberta mi je ljakovac bomaka. Predaj varu, mila makicu, varu. Pomaći mi da odiđem vodate. Ne znamam što se dečeva, okej? Okay? Mustam biti nebudje. Tanko moštrio od žuta dajino grani, tanda nezahvalno, jemamo teče.
And do you now see a language evolving beyond what's in this play? Is this a...
Lavinian belongs to the world of Nicholas's play. And if Nicholas needs more Lavinian, It's a real language in the sense that every language has the words it needs to express what it needs to express. Mm-hmm. So no language is impoverished. Languages have what they need to express what they need to express. And languages are infinitely expandable to express what they need to express. And so if Lavinian moves beyond the world of the play, if Elena walks out that exit and needs the word for love, and Nicholas writes to us and says, we need that word, it's Levda, Nicholas. It belongs to his play. We have no interest. I mean, maybe Dragana has a secret interest.
I was just going to say, there was something tricky about the creation of the language, because maybe towards the end of August, beginning of September, we sent Nicholas what we thought was the final lines of Lavinian for the play. A couple of days later, a message arrives from Nicholas: I need these two extra lines. And then this kept happening. Or we're getting rid of this. We want this. This is not working on stage, because this is the point at which the rehearsals had started. And so Christina and I had to have additional meetings, but we realized a language already exists. We have no creative freedom anymore, or the creative freedom has been curtailed, because we have to refer back to our old structures, and we were prisoners and in some things. And so in the beginning, when we were doing this word-for-word riffing, it was exhilarating. But now we had to, like true academics, refer back to things in the past, because we had established a grammar and we had established certain rules without ever writing them down. The rules existed without us having sort of spoken about them. So this was what was tricky in the later stages, knowing that we had to refer back to this system.
Yeah, the languages are about constraints, and we start getting more and more constrained by the language. So you don't have, they say that as babies begin babbling, they have all these sounds, but as they start becoming acquainted with a particular set, they begin getting rid of sounds that are not part of the language anymore. So there are constraints that are building in, and these constraints began building into Lavinian. We could no longer come up with a new word for such and such, because there already was a word. Though we did allow for a certain degree of
synonymity. Yes.
Well, why don't we bring Nicholas up, because I would love to hear more about this collaboration between the three of you. So everyone, please welcome our playwright, Nicholas. Welcome, sir. How are you?
Thank you.
So I'm curious about the genesis for you of the need for an invented language for this play.
The need really arose from two things. The first and probably most important point was neutrality. The themes that I wanted to speak about in Butcher, I needed the story to be neutral, because I did not want this to be about a particular conflict or about a particular group, because it wasn't about who was right or wrong. It's about the underlying questions that would be raised in telling the story. And I would say the second reason was that one of the most important things for me was that in a lot of ways, Butcher comes out of my love for Greek drama. And one of the tenets of Greek drama is that violence is never shown on stage. At that same time, I did want the Butcher to have his confession. And I decided the only way I could have that confession told on stage without betraying this idea of no violence shown on stage was to have it told in an invented language, so that nobody in the audience would actually understand the details of what he was saying, but could receive the violence of what he was saying.
And I had a really interesting reaction in as an audience member during that section when he is making his confession, because I found it visceral, but I struggled with empathizing with him, which, granted, he's describing things that are pretty hard to be empathetic towards, but generally in theater, I find that's usually an overwhelming emotion I have towards just about everything happening is a sense of empathy, but without being able to understand his language, that was challenged in me. Is that, how do you feel the audience is going to experience that section of the play without being able to, for it being mediated by the other characters in the show?
I think in some ways it is mediated by the other characters, only in the sense that because the characters on stage do understand what he's saying, I think we can get some cues from their reaction to what he's saying. And I think that was something that was important to me, that I didn't want to lose the audience entirely, and by having an ability to have an idea of the parts of his confession that were particularly brutal, some of the actors would react particularly intensely to those passages.
As a playwright, who often is the sort of sole author of a work, what was the experience of having collaborators that you were getting some external input into a play that you were creating? When you would send your work there and get it translated back, what was that experience like?
It was an excellent experience, and partially because it's not an experience I'm unused to, in the sense that creating a play is a collaborative experience, in the sense that a play is really made in rehearsal for me. And that means that the actors, the director, they're all contributing to what the final text of the play is going to be. And with Dragan and Christina, they weren't in the room with us, but they were part of that process. Mm-hmm. And I would say an integral part of that process, because as we've just heard, the diligence with which they created this language is a part of, I think, why the language works so well on stage. I think any kind of gobbledygook that I may have dreamed up of, the play would have suffered for it. Mm-hmm. And I mean. In some ways, I've learned some things tonight that I didn't know. In terms, I didn't realize you went word by word. That's kind of mind-boggling. And thank you. But at the same time, I see how that helped the play in the specificity of the language and the way that those actors struggled. You know, it's so hard. I'm in awe of how they did it, especially John, who played Yosef, who's basically his entire lines are all in Lavinian. It was really a tour de force for him to go through that and to sound so incredible on stage.
And because, like you said, it's a play created in the rehearsal room, so there's the written word and there's the written language, but then there's the spoken word by the actors in the spoken language. So how did you as a team go about not just getting the page or getting the words on the page, but being able to teach or coach the actors in the pronunciation, the speaking of it all?
We decided to make recordings. We live in Toronto. We couldn't do anything live with the actors, but we made recordings of all the lines in Lavinian and send those files to the team. So they would have a model, a base model, from which to pronounce. And Christina, you can speak about your transcription.
So I created two different transcriptions. One is dummy pronunciation guides, sort of like you would find in a tourist guide that's got those, you know, hola, como estas, so these just, you know, with capital, putting the stressed syllable in all caps and just coming up with some conventions for them. But then in the published version, I use the International Phonetic Alphabet so that some other team that doesn't have benefit of Dragana's recordings will be able to replicate. And then I got to watch the first read-through, and, some of the words were mispronounced, but I figured it actually didn't matter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so whatever the actors were comfortable with and the way they pronounced the words, because we're the only native speakers of Lavinian, and we don't care. And for all we know, it's a different dialect that we're just not familiar with.
Language evolves.
And language evolves.
And Dragana, I understand that you hadn't
experience the broader play until sitting in the audience. So you hadn't read the full script. There's everyone here seen it. Our folks listening to this afterwards possibly haven't yet, because there's a lot of there's surprises, there's twists and turns. So what was that experience like for you?
It was a conscious decision ultimately not to read the rest of the play, so my familiarity with the content was decontextualized. So perhaps maybe in contrast to the audience, I know the content of the confession in a way that future audiences won't know, but I didn't know anything else that was going to happen. I didn't know anything outside the Lavinian. And watching the play last night, I realized Lavinian is the obvious alienating element for the audience. It is the obvious foreign language. But I mentioned this to Nicholas afterwards, and I spoke about this with Christina. It is not the only language in the play that is not understood. The characters in the play struggle with the discourse or the language of law, and particularly that type of register that uses Latin or Greek. There's those tussles between Inspector Lamb and Hamilton, where it's very clear that this discourse of law, of legality, is a distancing mechanism, that it doesn't, and particularly later when the victim narrative comes in, that discourse actually doesn't, that language is completely removed from the tragedy, from the suffering, from the pain that was experienced by these groups, by those who were on the receiving end of the violence. And I suppose that was what was really interesting for me, because we had so much close contact with Lavinian, but Lavinian belongs in the deeper structure of the play. It's embedded into these other themes. And in fact, Lavinian as the foreign element is still connected thematically to these issues of, well, what does this type of justice give us? Does the legal system give us this type of retribution? Does it give us a satisfying conclusion?
Yeah, so I want to ask you about that, Nicholas, in a quick second. But first, what were the practical reasons for you making the conscious choice as a team for you to not know the rest of the play?
We thought it would be a fun experiment, actually, because Christina had read it from the beginning to the end, and I actually wanted to do so. I was going to read we received these beautiful editions just before we came to Calgary of The Butcher, and I was going to read it on the plane, but we decided it would be good. It would be good to compare. To compare notes afterwards if I didn't have access to it.
So, yes, Nicholas, if you could talk about the broader role, as Dragana was mentioning, of language in the play. There's the jokes and then sometimes very serious remarks about Greek and Latin and the language of law. What drew you to this theme?
I think language is something that almost all my plays have at least two languages in them. I think that's a function of growing up bilingual. And just being interested in language, but also in how people use language. I grew up in Quebec, and in some ways, language is used as an exclusion, and that I find that fascinating. What's interesting about what Dragana said is I never thought of it that way, but when she told me, I was like, of course. That makes perfect sense, and it really reinforces for me this idea that when writing the play, I know what I'm trying to do, but it's the audience that tells me what it means, mm-hmm. and that's really a perfect example of exactly that, and it's honestly it's one of the best things about writing for the theater, is that you get feedback from the audience, whether it's watching the play and hearing the audience react to it. Or the conversations afterwards.
You know, there was a moment in the show that I found quite striking and scary and a little disturbing is when the character comes in as a translator, and as an audience member, without knowing exactly what you get, I felt a subtext of she's not maybe translating everything he's saying. She's maybe not being honest about that. And I'm wondering. For you folks as linguists and as folks who've done translation, it struck me as such a corruption of the role of translator to not be accurate. And so I'm just curious what your feelings are about the responsibility of a translator.
Well, can I just say as a I am a linguist, but I moonlight as a literary translator. And for any of you who have done translation, there are about a million ways to be wrong, and there's no way to be right. Mm-hmm. So it's a losing proposition to think that your translator is going to get it all.
Fair enough. But in the moment, she wasn't making honest mistakes, was my reading as an audience member.
She is not making mistakes, in point of fact. That what she needs to translate and when she's telling you what he's saying, she's being honest with you. But you're the only one she's being honest with, I think. So what's happening on the stage and who is understanding what, the audience is cut out of part of it. But who's cut out of what on the stage, that's what we can't figure out for a long time. Who needs the translation and who doesn't need the translation? And who needs translating what? The audience may need the translation from Lavinian, which you're not getting. But, Dragan, I love your point, because what's happening on the stage is that other kind and much deeper lack of translation, mm-hmm. of concepts. And what we think we're doing might not be what we're really doing. Mm-hmm. And so Hamilton, who is speaking the language of justice, he might as well be speaking Esperanto. I mean, he might as well be using a language that's not English, because they are not communicating.
Nicholas, I'm curious how having, when the language comes into you, if that helped or affected your understanding of Lavinia as a culture and as a country. That's not present in the play, but in your kind of writer's imagination, how the presence of this language changed how you pictured or imagined this country that you were inventing.
Not really, I would say. But I think what was great about, this is in a very strange way, because Lavinian was so specific, I kind of placed it geographically. Even though it doesn't exist, it just gave I think it gave me, and I think it gave the actors as well. It just anchored it somewhere, even though that somewhere is nowhere, it felt anchored. Mm-hmm. It felt like something real. And I really think that's due to the diligence of creating the language.
Hey folks, we'll return to our conversation in a quick moment, but I just wanted to let you know what we've got in store for you for the next episode of The Deep Field. Next time, we'll bring you an interview I did with Megs Fitzgerald, who has just come out with this phenomenal new graphic novel called Photo Booth, a memoir. It tells the story of Megs's passionate love for photo booths and her practice as a photo booth artist. It's a wonderfully unique book. It's part memoir, part history, part technical manual, part portrait of this international photo booth community that, if you're like me, you didn't know existed. And it's all beautifully told and drawn by Megs. Now, we'll have this episode for you in the coming weeks, but in the meantime, I think that if you popped out and snagged yourself a copy of this book, you would not regret it. Again, it's called Photo Booth, a Memoir by Megs Fitzgerald. You can find it online, or even better, you could go and visit a straight-up real-life bookstore and buy yourself one. Now, back to our live conversation. We have an audience here, and I'm wondering if there's anyone here with a question that they would like to ask any of our panelists here.
I'd like to know each of your favorite Lavinian words.
Do I have the advantage because I'm the only one with the script? Oh, no, you also have the script. Christina, you probably have some off the top of your head, so I'm going to just scroll through, and I'll let you answer first.
So I do have a favorite word, and it there's a trailing anecdote. So I think my favorite word is talci, which means to be quiet, shut up. And I like talci because I was doing field research in a Macedonian village in Albania, and my Albanian is nowhere near as good as my Macedonian by a long country mile. And I was in a mixed group with Macedonians and Albanians, and I was trying to explain, I was visiting the family of someone I know in Canada who wanted me, while I was in the Balkans, to go visit her family. and I'm trying to explain all the family relations to the nth degree in this photograph to somebody who doesn't know Macedonian, who's a married-in member of the family who only speaks Albanian. And so I torturously make my way through this. And then at the very end, they all go, you know, that was really great, but you've confused this relative with the other one. This guy actually speaks Macedonian. And so they were all laughing at me behind my back. And then the man of the household said, yes, we have an expression called mulchi tolchi, which means we know that you don't know that we know something, and we're purposely being quiet about it. And so that multi-tulchi I thought was so funny, and the way they were laughing at my expense, and I just thought it was so funny, and I liked being able to revive that moment in Lavinia.
I'm going to subvert your question. I hope you don't mind. This is going to sound contradictory given the content of Josef's confession, but Christina and I are quite proud of the section because we realized this was the speech, and I would say the speech that comes towards the end of the play that Josef does is perhaps the pinnacle of our work on Lavinian. So it was towards in the latter stages, and we got so good. Like, that's what it feels like. And there are some really, really lovely sounding words. There are things that, the line that I read, omashna for dangerous, instead of, that was something that we came up with. When Josef says zadstanesh, it's from, do you understand? Do you understand this? And these are such fascinating and realistic words. And so I suppose that this challenge for the actor and this pinnacle is the pinnacle of the language. And I think it shows the full complexity of the system. Yeah.
It's also that wonderful moment where Draga and I have talked a lot about how to balance authenticity with opacity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that. We didn't have to make up a grammar. This is a language that has a grammar that grew out of a natural language. And so Slavic speakers, from whatever Slavic language they come to, they're going to get stuff in the beginning where it's just sentence by sentence. But as we move into more and more complex moments in the play, and Dragana told me that she had forgotten the word-for-word translation, so as she's hearing the speech that we wrote and invented, mm-hmm. she no longer remembers. So we move from authenticity deeper and deeper into the opacity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Nicholas?
I would say, if I had to pick the Lavinian word that I think is the most appropriate, certainly in terms of sound, I think curvetino has to take the cake. Because the violence of those sound of the sound of that word, I think, reflects its meaning. But the word that I love to hear was, and I'm going to mispronounce it, vaivotina.
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 Vaivotina. That was the word that I really liked the most.
And can you define both of those words
for
us?
Why don't I? I'll define vaivotinja, which is the Duchess.
I'm going to have to comment on the other word because it actually is a real word. It is a real word, and it is a real word that is in augmentative. Most of you know what diminutives are when things are cute and little. Augmentatives are things mm-hmm. that are make you know, big and ugly. It's where we make it bigger and whatever. And curvetina is the augmentative of the abusive term. Of whore, and it is a word that does exist across a long Slavic continuum, and we felt that you needed something that would really pop, and this is a word that has a lot of, it crosses language group, it drifts into the Baltic states, we get the original root of the kurv root, and so that augmentative, we thought, which is much more rarely used in dialectal, would have that dramatic force.
And this is an example that we wanted to talk about, but thought it was perhaps inappropriate. So,
I'm a linguist. All words are neutral.
And everyone here watched the play already, so we've seen some stuff.
Yeah.
another question from the audience. I saw a half start
to the microphone just before.
Can you talk a little bit more about your process? Was there an actual word-for-word start in English, or did you start with a sentiment of what you wanted to express and end up with Lavinian?
No, I think it was a pretty straightforward process in that I just sent the sentences to Christina and Dragana, but actually thank you, because this is an opportunity to apologize for sending the sentences during rehearsal. I knew that it was not the most efficient way to work, but unfortunately it was the reality of creating new work.
Well, that's what was exciting about it.
It was really exciting.
And yes. There's nothing quite more exciting than I'm flying in from New York and Dragan, I don't know where you were, you're in Calgary. I need this by this afternoon. I'm in the airport. Dragan is I don't know where. I need this by the 3 o'clock in the afternoon rehearsal. That was exciting for us because we felt part of the process.
Yes.
Thank God.
But it was scary because then I had to make the executive decision and my co-creator, i.e. the other half of the Lavinian Academy, is absent. And so if there is an error, it's on my shoulders and I might get the sack later. I don't know.
There is no error.
Another question.
Are there words that don't exist in Lavinian that they would have to borrow from another language or that they would have to have slang for?
In the world of the play, no. Every word that Lavinian needs in the world of the play, Lavinian has.
Except. Okay. Except okay. Which we made an executive decision to keep in English because it is such a used universal, I don't know what genre, what's the genre of okay? It's not an adverb.
It's a discourse particle, and everyone uses it. So whatever language you're using, people say okay.
Yes.
And we hope to keep in the accent of his language, but he used okay.
Any other questions? We have time for maybe one more.
The language is called Lavinian. Where does that word come from?
So Lavinian was chosen, I took it from Shakespeare. It comes from Titus Andronicus, and in that play there is a character named Lavinia, and in Titus she's raped and she has her hands and her tongue cut off. And so to me immediately the word is infused and embedded with violence. And that's where Lavinian comes from.
Yeah.
Butcher was published by Coach House Books, corresponding with its opening night last night at our theater, October 17th. And I'm curious to ask about whether or not there is both the English and the Lavinian translation published in the book, and what if there was any decision making around that choice.
That's a great question. Thank you, Laurel. Yes, the book has both the English and the Lavinian, but one of the choices I had to make, in fact, the first choice I had to make was, do I even include the English translation in the book? And ultimately I felt it would be unfair not to have the translation. However, the translation is at the end of the book. It is not in the script directly, and that's because, one, it gives the reader the choice. He or she can choose whether or not they want the translation of the Lavinian, but also it means that the first time that they read the play, they can have an experience that is closer to the audience's experience of seeing the play on stage.
Thank you to Christina, Dragna, and Nicholas once again for chatting with me. And thanks to Laurel Green and the fine team at Alberta Theatre Projects for hosting us. Butcher is on stage till November 1st, and see it if you can, really. It's amazing. Or, as Nicholas mentions, it's already also a published script, so you could buy it and have a little Lavinian in your homes. It's published by Coach House Books. You can find them online at chbooks.com. The haunting cello music that you've been hearing this episode is from the original composition by Morag Northey, who created the music for this world premiere production. Thanks, Morag, for letting us include it here. You've also been hearing original sound design from Peter Mahler. Thank you, Peter. seriously, guys, the number of creative geniuses working on the show is embarrassing.
If you don't want to miss an episode, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, and we would love to hear from you. You can get to us at Facebook on facebook.com/thedeepfield or on Twitter. Our handle is @thedeepfield. The Deep Field is produced by myself, Cole Chakey, Anton DeGroot, and Laurel Green. Thanks again. Till soon.